Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 215.
This week on the podcast, Donald Trump would like you to believe he was not on cocaine during the first presidential debate. We would like you to believe that no one goes on a 3 a.m. tweet storm without at least a bump.
And dedicated to his reality show craft, the Donald is now toiling in melodramatic tax, porn, and beauty pageant drama.
Plus, it's 2016, the year of the anti-endorsement.
And based on the 233-page California voter information guide, the plastic bag industry is gonna be pissed, but the paper industry is probably celebrating.
Californians might not have to live to see the outcome of this horrible presidential race due to apocalyptic earthquakes.
And the Senate's furious that Obama doesn't control the laws of time and space, and is mad he can't make it 2 days ago so they can go back and listen to him.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and we're two millennials podcasting from an apartment paid for with money earned at a job.
That's right.
Here we are.
Not either of our parents' basements.
No, I know. Yeah. It's crazy how Shocking. We got out of there.
Yeah.
You can also find us on the web.
Yes.
It's another place, aside from this apartment, that you can find us.
Yes.
That's www.braintrustlive.com.
That's right.
That's where you should look for us.
Yeah.
You will find us in there for probably the rest of the month, because we have to get through this 233-page voter guide that we sent.
This is so ridiculous. I got this out of the mailbox earlier this week, and I was like, I immediately took a picture and sent it to you.
Yeah, well,
and forced you to guess how many pages it was.
Yeah, and I wouldn't have guessed. I, like, guessed something like 6 million, I think, in order to make sure I was right.
And that was close.
Yeah, I mean, that was as close. I figured if I guessed 6 million, I wouldn't be wrong.
No, that's how much it feels
like. Yeah,
it's weighty.
Our official California voter guide that gets mailed to every registered voter
is
233 pages long. That's because there's roughly 1 million...
Yeah.
Propositions.
And we're going to try and write about all of them. So God help us.
God help us. We'll see if we get through
luck.
That. We're famous for starting a project like that and not finishing it. But
we have done.
We have done
voter guides before.
We have done voter guides before.
So we're proven voter guide writers.
And we have to know how to vote on these propositions.
I know.
And it's always confusing with the propositions because it's always like the secret thing no one will tell you is that this money will take food out of the mouths of children and put it in the mouths of rich billionaires.
I know.
So if you want more books for schools, then good luck. You know, it's always something like that.
I know.
That's just like too horrible. That's too horrible.
It is. By the way, did you miss us, guys? We've been gone for so long. We've been having the most spectacular travel.
I know.
Times.
Yeah, you guys really missed.
I was on Iceland.
You missed a lot of great trips.
I know. Sorry.
Sorry.
Come with us next time.
Yeah.
We should get to the point where like we can have like our own cruise.
Yes.
You know, like
that's
they
the goal.
Do.
That's the goal. Like the Nation Cruise, but for us.
Yes.
We'll
the
just
Rangers
be
Life
in
cruise.
Panels where we moderate panels of people we like, and then we'll also be at a pool.
Exactly.
Sunbathing.
Yeah. I'll be drunk for most of it too.
Yeah, that's fine. It's a cruise. You're not supposed to be sober for those. I was
Why
on
bother?
I was on like an overnight ferry that some
well,
people take
a too,
as a cruise. And so like it's like a ferry between Stockholm and Helsinki. And some people go take it from, you know, from the afternoon in Stockholm. They go to Helsinki for the day and then they come back that night.
Mm-hmm.
So there's like a nightclub in the
Ooh.
Ferry and like got hit on by a lot of very old European men who were also very rotund. A lot of that going on.
Oh,
Turns
boy.
Out that doesn't matter if you're in a quote unquote egalitarian country. Men are men everywhere, as someone said. So that was fun.
Oh, God.
But the thing that we came back for was this presidential debate.
Thank God. I basically planned my whole day around it.
I mean, you had to.
My whole life time
I mean,
around it.
This was the event we've been gearing up for since last whatever month it is right now.
I didn't,
September,
I left
October,
work early
I don't even
so
know
I could
anymore.
Have a seat at 6 o'clock. And I didn't even tell work I was leaving early because I was like...
They should know.
It's useless because like... I am just leaving at the time that I'm leaving that day anyway. I could have been mid very important client meeting and I just would have thrown my table up, just
like
tipped it over and just ran out screaming like my hair was on fire to get home for that.
I mean that was
it was worth the choice.
Yeah.
Because
it
was genius.
Yeah, it was everything that we could have predicted it would be.
It was.
And some other exciting things too.
Yeah, it
like,
was.
Like I didn't foresee the shimmy. You know?
I mean, the shimmy is the greatest thing ever.
I've been
Did she practice the shimmy, do you think?
I wondered that, too, because I was sort of like...
I could see that being in a thing of her, like, you know,
people
body
like
language
you more if
lexicon.
You,
like,
if you...
It seems sort of like a cheesy, sort of like grandma-y reaction to something scandalous that somebody has said, kind of like.
Yeah.
Because that's what it was. She'd just been scandalized.
She'd been scandalized, so she shimmied a little.
Right, exactly. Ooh. Right?
I wonder if that's just like something you inherit as like a Midwestern lady.
I think it is.
That you just kind of like. That you eventually get to the age where you start to use the scandal shimmy.
Yeah, I think so.
Like, I think that might be what it is.
Yeah, that's what we should, that's what it's from it was henceforth called.
The scandal shimmy. Yeah. It was by far the most humanizing moment of this campaign for her, by the
for
way.
For sure, I
mean,
know. No wonder it was the takeaway.
I mean, that's the only takeaway. All of the conversation about her in the aftermath of this focused on, like, she offered policy solutions and she actually sounded like a coherent human being. And, like, I couldn't, like, first of all... Her supporters know that she's a coherent human being. She's a smart lady. Like,
right.
That wasn't in question. No. And, like, we also know that Donald Trump is, like, an insane person who just, like, spouts bigoted nonsense at every turn. So, like, that wasn't a surprise.
Yeah. Everybody played their role in that
everybody
debate.
Played their role. The only, like, this was, like, the only moment where she really, like, broke out of her role and, like, offered us something exciting.
And it was at the perfect moment too, because it was, like, after, like, a, like, insane... tirade of his, like
one of many
that, like, literally, like, would have left anyone feeling like he needed to be in a padded room.
I mean,
and it was about her temperament,
exactly,
and how he has such a better temperament than she does in an unhinged rant talking about his own temperament, which was just, like, so good, like, on, you know, like a meta level, because it wasn't a rant about, you know, jobs or immigration. It was a rant about his temperament. So, like...
Well, not wrongfully, there were a lot of cocaine jokes being made about his performance. He was, first of all, sniffing like a madman, to the point that I was in Sweden for the debate, and I watched the Swedish morning news. It was the lead story on all three of their news channels there.
Yeah.
Because everywhere I went, everyone was, like, obsessed with this election, and everyone was like, explain Trump to me, and I was like, sorry.
I was going to say, leave me alone. Don't tell me what to do. I can't.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, explain Le Pen to me. Like, you don't live in the same country as those people. I don't live in the same country as these people.
Yeah.
But in any case.
Explain the pirate party to me.
Exactly.
That's taking over Iceland, by the way, which is where I was.
Yeah, that's a real thing. But he kept, like, sniffing weirdly, and they did, like, a mashup of it on Swedish television.
It's unsettling.
Which was brilliant. It was, like, a great comedic moment of Swedish news comedy.
That.
Yeah. No, I mean...
Swedish news comedy. Is that one of your new favorite genres?
Yeah. But it was, like, so bizarre, and everyone thought they had invented the cocaine joke. I saw it all over the internet, and I was like, no one invented it. He invented it. Like, he invited the joke.
Yeah.
The joke was obvious. Because he was, like, giving such a weirdly, like... unhinged performance that it seemed like it had to be the work of cocaine.
Well, everybody
and he was sniffing all the time.
Everybody seemed to think that he, like, started okay, and I guess...
Well, no.
Sure.
Let me... Because I watched the debate in two parts.
Yeah.
So, let me tell you how it started, because I have a very... I watched half of it in Sweden, and then I...
I know.
So, he starts it, and for literally 10 minutes, he's just not screaming anything yet.
Yes, correct.
He hasn't started interrupting anyone. It's 13 minutes before he starts interrupting her, and so for the first 10 minutes, it's literally just that he's not acting like a ranting lunatic.
Yes.
She's stumbling over some of her planned zinger lines, and so they're not...
Well, she stumbled in her opening...
Yeah, her opening thing was not good. Her opening remarks were terrible.
No.
But, so for the first... 10 to 15 minutes, it seems like things are going in a sort of predictable manner as debates go. It's kind of too, you know, I was kind of surprised to see her stumbling a little because I was like, she has prepared probably better than anyone else on this stage for this debate. And I expected him to deliver vague answers in a sort of commanding voice without using correct English. Like, I expected all the things that were happening. So it's, and then 13 minutes in, she delivers her first successful zinger, which is about him not paying his taxes.
Yeah.
And he interrupts with, if that's what's called business or something like that.
Yes.
And then he just, like, derailed.
That makes me smart, I think, right?
No, he said it's called business, I think. She kind of delivered a line about how he rooted for the housing crisis.
Oh, that's what it was.
And
he
goes, it's called business.
Yeah. So the he said that's what makes me smart in regards to the taxes.
Yeah.
But that was later in the debate.
Right.
Yeah.
So in any case, after that 13-minute mark, it was like he couldn't stop talking. And then it started to look like he was on drugs. Because he couldn't pay attention to what was going on.
Well, and I thought the smartest decision that she made, actually, and it was... I didn't hear very many people talking about this, but it seemed
was
like
to not interrupt him back.
Yes, it was seemed like a concerted
like
decision that she made, and I don't know if she'd made it before the debate. I don't know if they had talked about it. I don't know if she just decided like, but because
I'm sure she made it before. I'm sure they knew that was going
to
happen.
I was chatting with my mom on Facebook, and she was just enraged with how much more he was talking.
Yeah.
She wanted Lester Holt to interrupt him. She wanted Hillary to interrupt him, and I was like, Mom. He's just going on unhinged rant after
this
unhinged
is brilliant.
Rant. Like, she would let him talk the entire 90 minutes if she could get away with it.
She would
like,
not appear at this debate if she could get away with it. I mean, that's
like,
and she's a good debater.
Exactly.
Like, but I think that that was a concerted effort because
the thing that a lot of news outlets
noted that I also agree with was that because the audience couldn't really react, like, and they do, they sometimes break out of that
and
role when he, and they
the,
did it, a few times when he said some zingery things about her and vice versa, but because of that, every time he interrupted, it was in this like silent echo chamber.
Yeah.
So the impact was like magnified.
Yeah.
So at a certain point, it was kind of like infuriating to watch.
Well, and the interruptions,
and there was no one doing anything.
Well, and the interruptions were also just like these weird, like one word that he would just be like, wrong.
Yeah.
Wrong. Wrong. Right. False. No. You know, like it's, but like.
Yeah.
It didn't even seem like he really wanted to interrupt her to, like, actually, like, say anything himself.
No, it was...
He just wanted to just, like...
He kind of accidentally drove this, like, misogynist narrative by being... Where
totally.
It was like, this is what men... This is what it is to be a woman on the national stage.
Well,
is to have an idiot who's unqualified interrupt you with the word wrong while you're delivering a fact and he's not.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
That's... And so it kind of lent itself to the narrative I've been furious that she hasn't really been embracing, which is, like... Not that, you know, she hasn't really been that successful at sort of like driving the narrative of like first woman president because she's such a known quantity to us. She represents so much continuity that it doesn't feel that exciting to have the first woman president if it's a Clinton.
Yeah.
Because it's like she's been the first woman president for 30 years at this point. And, it, you know, I think that I faulted her for not choosing a female running mate on that count because I thought it would have been exciting and lent this a historic quality that could have been like an Obama style kind of historic moment. But I feel like she's doing a good job now of sort of slowly drawing attention to the ways in which like smaller acts of sexism on his part are kind of stacking up against her. So that like at this debate, it was just like a great show of everything she sort of has like vaguely, you know, like vaguely kind of like hinted at about his temperament for this whole time.
Yeah.
And then it was sort of like, oh no, he is literally going to interrupt you with the word wrong every time you open your mouth.
Yeah.
And like, he is not delivering correct facts in the in the midst of all that.
Well, and they had brought up, they were intending to go directly after, I mean, he, you know, walked into so many of her traps, but I mean, he set that misogyny, you know, narrative up like, himself there, but she was going to bring it up herself regardless of what, of whether he was interrupting her or not, because she, you know,
they had already
there was this whole Miss Universe thing, which we're going to get into further later, but by the time that debate had happened, they had already shot a video with that woman
that came out
the next morning.
They had timed the whole thing out.
They had a whole misogyny storyline that was going to come out of that debate, whether he interrupted her or not.
Yeah, and
so
he walked right into it, only
added to, you know, the...
He also had, like, a hilarious moment where he did the thing that I would pay him money to do publicly, which is start a question on a serious topic and end with it promoting one of his properties. There was like a question about race and policing that they got asked. And
oh my
obviously,
God, this was so good.
He's the Law and Order candidate.
Yeah.
So he was, you know, Hillary Clinton's going on about
and
like.
He's not a racist because he lets people golf.
Right. He lets people golf. And so he ends basically with like a promo for his golf club in Palm Beach.
I know.
Which is 95% white, by the way.
I'm sure it is.
Which I thought was like, it was like that press conference he gave where he just like promoted Trump steaks and Trump water and Trump airlines. Like it was like, it was like one of those moments where he shifted into reality show mode like instantly and like celebrity mode instantly.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is so jarring to see this on a presidential debate stage, but like, this is what he is. That's he was himself. That's,
The other thing that like was a big takeaway for me, and like we knew because he had basically said as much that he hadn't practiced much for this, but you know a lot of members of his own party were mad about his performance.
Yeah.
And I think that if you are, even as a Trump supporter, a person who like actually likes Donald Trump, you should have been offended at his preparation for that. Because, you know, I realize that a presidential debate doesn't necessarily have any indication as to how good of a president you will be.
No.
But there are a few things that when running for president, you have to do as basically part of the, you know, job application.
I respect you voters enough to do some work.
Right. And one of those things, really one of the only things,
yeah.
You have to have a convention. You right. have to have a couple debates.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to give release your tax,
well,
your
right.
tax
he's,
returns, which you're not doing. But anyway, the fact that he chose
to
go into that debate
like openly unprepared
should be offensive to the people who are his supporters.
Here's what I have to say about that.
I mean, I'm not really a supporter of hers, but if she went in there and she hadn't practiced once and she got her ass handed to her,
I would have been like,
you can go fuck yourself, you stupid idiot.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I feel like no one is saying.
No
to him
one is
ever.
Saying. Like, I know.
Like in as crass a way as he would say it to them. Like, I feel like his supporters should literally be able
and
to
there
say,
were things
you
that,
can go fuck yourself, you idiot.
Yeah, exactly. And there were things that were like so simple for him that he could have done. Like he never said the word untrustworthy.
I know.
He never said
messaging, you guys.
He never, you know, he got
so
asked.
Easy.
He got asked a question on cybersecurity, and he never turned that into why she shouldn't be trusted with classified material, which, I mean, I don't agree with. But,
right,
like, that would have been, like, there were questions
there
that, because
there were set up questions.
There were a lot of Republicans who were not happy with Lester Holt because they asked him about his taxes and they asked, but, like, they didn't ask her about her emails. He did bring up her emails at one point, but, like, you know, he could have turned a lot of the softball questions that
Lester
Holt
asked him into direct attacks on her.
Into attacks on her.
If he could have bothered to...
If he would have practiced for, like, literally 1 hour.
Yeah, yeah.
Or had a plan
unprepared, if I were in his situation, I
could have
done
better. I could have 100% done better, too, because I would have known where, like...
I, like, live in America,
so
I've,
living in
the
world, I know what her weaknesses are.
Right,
so
exactly.
It's like, if you ask me a question about something that has to do with the internet.
Right.
Like I know what I'm going to turn
exactly.
that into at that point. So it also, I mean...
It kind of makes me doubt his media mastermindness, too.
I know.
Is the only thing that I think he has.
I know. Like, exactly.
Well, and I think, you know, I think that in this debate in particular, and in debates in general, I often feel this way, talking about who won is bullshit. You can't win a debate unless the debate is like a debate that has like a definitive outcome that you can, like, yes, we will go to war with Afghanistan. That's a debate that somebody won. But, or in Afghanistan, I guess.
Right.
We're at war with everyone in the Middle East.
Sure.
So,
yeah.
But you can't really win a presidential debate. Like, there's no criteria really for winning because, and I think this debate perfectly proves why.
Yeah.
I don't, as much as, like, obviously she came off as the only thinking person in that debate.
Yeah.
Obviously she came off as an intelligent person who has a lot of experience and knowledge. And she did this thing where she would, like, overname, like, random
she
people.
She always does that, especially
was,
when she gets
it
into
was,
foreign
as
policy
As if she was,
talk.
Like, applying for the job of proving she knows about foreign policy, which she doesn't need to do because we know she knows about foreign policy. She was the fucking Secretary of State for 4 years and was, like, in the White House with her husband for 8 years. Like, I believe that Hillary Clinton knows the names of every minor ISIS leader.
Yeah.
I believe that she won't forget where Aleppo is. I believe that Hillary Clinton personally knows the presidents of most foreign nations.
Right, and like, which ones she likes and agrees with.
And which ones she likes and agrees with. Another thing we're going to get to in a moment. But, I mean, these are all things I already know about her. I also believe that when she talks in detail about things that no one actually cares about and fails in the process to kind of deliver, like, sort of sweeping, inspiring statements, she loses people.
Yeah.
She doesn't break out of the sort of mold. Like, because we know, we get it. She's smart, you guys.
Right.
Like, there are many ways in which I don't agree with her policy-wise.
Right.
I have not doubted that she's, like, a smart person. I've insisted that she might be an evil person, but I've never doubted that she's a smart person.
I know.
And, like, I think that what she needs to do to change the narrative about herself and expand her appeal is not prove that she's smart at the debate. We know it. She's never going to come off as not smart in a debate.
That's true.
That's never going to happen. But she needs to kind of... break out of that. I think PBS called it, like, intellectually smug sounding. So, like, people kind of view her as intellectually smug. It sounds like, you know, she sounds patronizing when she does that. And I think that that makes it hard for her to appeal to voters who want her to be inspiring.
Right. And she needs some more, like, she needs more simple language, I think, because
he
speaks in simple language. And I don't want her to sound like an idiot.
No.
But, like, you know.
But Obama accomplished both. Bill Clinton accomplished both.
Exactly.
These are things that are
Donald
possible.
Trump does a good job you know, I mean, I'm using air quotes here, good job. But, like, when he talks about jobs, because he just talks about, like, jobs going overseas and, like, things like that. And, like, she gets into the minutiae of those things. Yeah. And, like, while she's probably right about most of them,
they would argue that she has to do this to sell herself harder because she's a woman and people kind of doubt her credibility all the time. And I get that, I guess. But I also think that doing that kind of, like, is the wrong way to view running a campaign where, for the most part, her kind of like her trustworthiness and likability and all of these things are determined by sort of the larger picture she can give us.
Yeah.
I sort of resent the notion that Americans should be expected to understand this much about the minutiae of policy.
I know.
Enough
That's
to
why
understand.
I hate the prop system.
No, exactly. Like enough to understand that what she's saying is smarter than what he's saying.
Well, right.
I think that. I think that it is unfair to people who don't have guaranteed health insurance and have to work multiple jobs and have, you know, 17 kids that don't get any special support and, like, you know, stuff like that, to insist that they also spend, you know, read 233 pages of a voter guide and understand the minutiae of every Hillary Clinton policy.
Right.
I think that it is not worth politicians. I think that it is worth them releasing those details.
Yes.
Absolutely, because there are people that are interested.
And we have to know that you have a plan. I don't need you to explain.
I think the messaging, in person, needs to be kind of tailored to kind of a larger consensus, which is more about what your priorities are going to be and what you sort of see as the main problems facing Americans than what's not. And I think on that count, Trump often beats her in this sort of like larger messaging front. And as much as he sounds like a ranting lunatic, he's reflecting the rage that a lot of middle America feels. And so they're not listening. No one wants to listen to her go on about her fucking foreign policy experience. Like, I couldn't give a shit about the name of random third tier ISIS leaders. Like, these aren't things that interest, and these are things that like interest me as a person.
Yeah.
But in a debate, I'm really listening to hear how they message. And, and I think that because of that, I don't see this debate sort of expanding anyone's appeal, changing anyone's mind. I think if you're a Trump supporter, you're launching a protest vote.
Yeah.
Sorry, guys. Everyone, we were talking about this earlier, and we're going to talk about it in a second, but basically everyone is protest voting in this election.
Yeah.
So if you tell me one more stupid talking point about how a protest vote is a vote for Donald Trump, I'm going to contend that a protest vote is the only kind of vote you can cast in this race.
I agree.
So I want to be, I want you to be clearer.
You're protesting something in this
race. Protesting something in this race. But but I think that that makes, I think that the challenge that's going to, the challenge with these debates is that the media is going to pat itself on the back for being like, Hillary Clinton's a genius and we knew it. And Clinton supporters are going to pat themselves on the back. Rightfully, she gave a much better performance than he did in that she looks like a competent person.
Right.
But I think that they need to think differently about what she actually needs to do to kind of broaden her appeal enough so that she's not running neck and neck with a madman.
The one thing that I will say is that, and I think we're going to get into polls a little bit, and she did seem to get a sort of
She got a small
out
bump
of here. And I saw that coming, actually.
Yeah.
And I think it will continue to be so because, like, regardless of whether, unless she has, like, some sort of, like, epic snafu at a debate, the one thing that, like, and we've talked about this in regards to polling on the podcast, is that the reason that this got close and the polls have gotten closer is because of her fluctuating poll numbers.
Right.
Trump mostly stays the same. He's sort of like generally like in the low 40s, like nationally and even in the states that are close. She will go up and go down.
Huge margins.
And she had, by huge margins. And she had, you know, she had a big lead after the convention where people saw her and they were like, oh, right, she's a reasonable, competent person who would probably make, like, a serviceable president.
Right.
And, like, I think that with these debates, yes, she would probably be able to get a bigger bump if she did what you just said, and I don't disagree with you at all. But I think that she thinks that if she comes out of all three of these looking like a general rational person, that, like, that is, she's probably done it.
That's, I mean, I think that this whole time, though, they have sort of, like, been thinking so small about how to increase. Like, I think that she could do that and message better.
Yes,
and
I
that would
too.
Be a safe way to rid
like
us
you
of
said,
the threat
she's
of Donald
always
Trump.
Going to look like the smart one.
She's always, like, she is the smart one.
Right, exactly.
It's, like, and, like, I understand the compulsion to, so, you know, there's a lot of overt misogyny in this race. There's a lot of sort of open questioning of whether, like, essentially a woman can be a smart person. Like, I understand the compulsion to sort of be like, no, see, women are smart. See how smart I am? I'm talking about policy. I can name third tier ISIS leaders or whatever. Like, but I don't think that any thinking people in America think she's not smart and competent. I think that there are thinking people in America who think she's not trustworthy. I think there are thinking people in America who don't find her inspirational.
Yeah.
I think that there are thinking people in America who don't think her priorities line up with theirs.
Yeah.
And she could vaguely claim they do.
Yeah.
She is ultimately vaguely lined up with the Democratic platform. She's not specifically lined up with it, as I would see it. But she is vaguely talking about... And, I mean, I get mad at her campaign because it's like they don't want to rid us of this horrible threat.
I know.
It's like they are not talking to anyone who... that they don't want to hear anything they don't want to hear about their messaging, it sounds like.
I know.
Because I think it's pretty clear what they need to do. It's she got beaten by a first-term senator last time who had better messaging. He didn't deliver a single fucking plan the entire campaign.
No.
He just sounded really inspirational, and he sounded like he would be historic. And I was like, yeah, man, okay. Like,
give me the
same
bumper
fucking platform. I was ready with the bumper sticker. And it was all because I trusted that he would sort of, like, shepherd a shift in ideology and sort of a shift in priorities. And that is what she does not seem to, like, she's not making a case that she's doing that.
No.
In any case, there was some good signs in the polls, though, right after the debate.
Yes.
She's now... up 7 points in Michigan, according to the Detroit News WDIV poll.
Yep. That had been tightening, which is a concern.
That was a pretty big bump that she experienced.
That's a safe blue state, like, in theory.
This is such a weird year.
But she did lose Michigan.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's...
And that's a huge, you know, obviously, that that's a
big
huge...
moment.
It was a big moment. And that's obviously a huge trade.
It's a huge trade state.
So you could understand why that would be close. So the fact that she's sort of... is back up with a moderately comfortable lead there
is promising.
Comforting.
She's up 7 in New Hampshire.
Yep.
It wouldn't boggle my mind if New Hampshire voted for Trump because, like, they're so unpredictable. I don't fucking know. But it would boggle my mind if they voted for Trump. Like, it would be so weird.
Yeah, I know, right?
It'd be so weird. In Florida, she's up by 4 now. And in Nevada, she's up by 6, which is, I think, a 4-point bump since mid-August. And nationally, she's up by between 3 and 5 points, depending on what polls you look at. They haven't polled since the debates in Pennsylvania and Virginia, but she's been up. In Virginia, she's up by a lot because she's got Tim Kaine running with her, and the entire Virginia establishment is former Clintonites.
Yeah.
In Pennsylvania, she's up by tight margins because that's another trade state.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of interested to see, but she's been up consistently, but she's been up by like 1 to 2 points.
Yeah.
Iowa's a tie.
Well,
Trump,
that's
by the way, though,
an improvement.
Trump has to win Iowa. So if Iowa's a tie, that's bad news for him.
Yeah.
Colorado leaning Trump. I need to have a discussion with some Colorado listeners. I don't know if we have any, but get your shit together. What the hell are you doing?
I know.
Like, this guy...
This was a state...
This guy's not going to care about your legalized marijuana situation.
This was
He's
a
not going to help at all.
This was a state that a month ago we brought you a story about her pulling all of her money out of because it was safe.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is the kind of bizarre strategic... nonsense blunders that I feel like are going on. Like, this is concerning, and I think it's because they're, like, vaguely, like, libertarian-y there.
I have a feeling...
I bet Gary Johnson's polling all over the place there.
That's what I was just about to say.
Yeah, yeah, I bet he's all up in there polling nonsense. We're going to have a talk about
but
that
later.
But if
she wins sort of, like, many combinations of any of those places...
Yeah, she's in a better position
than all of
is.
Them.
Yeah. He's in a much more, you know... difficult position because there are states he has to win in order to, and she kind of has a few options, especially because
many options.
She's probably going to win Virginia.
I was
going to
say,
if
she wins Virginia, Colorado, which now is maybe leaning him, but she's been ahead in, and you know, Michigan, Pennsylvania, some of these other states, that she could actually lose,
like Ohio.
She could lose Ohio and Florida.
Yeah,
actually, she's got, assuming that she wins all the places that the Democrats have classically won. So,
but we shouldn't be in a world
where
she can't win the places Democrats classically win, you guys.
No, I know.
Come on.
I know. No, I'm with you.
This is so insane.
She's
been helped by the fact that Trump's been nothing but scandal ridden all week.
So
this is the story that she kind of like specifically brought up at the debates in order to kind of like launch this huge offensive.
Yes.
She was talking about the Donald's terrible treatment of the former Miss Universe winner.
Yeah. What's her name?
Alicia Machado.
Yeah.
And this has resulted in, like, the most hilarious 5 days of, like, tweet storming from him. And then tweet storming from her. And then there was, like, this on early Friday morning at 3 a.m., he went on this crazy tweet rant.
Yeah.
Which lasted for two... But this man is not a man who does not do drugs or drink alcohol.
No. I'm sorry.
You are not up...
He might not drink alcohol.
Well, he might not be certainly doing drugs. Like, you are not up at 3 a.m. angry tweeting if you are not on something. At 3 a.m., I don't have the energy to even look at Twitter.
Also, there have been a lot of studies done recently, and I know about these studies because I read them in regards to a lot of my coworkers who don't sleep, because I will often wake up in the morning and it will just appear as though everyone has worked
overnight.
Yeah. That actually leads to you basically going crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, it really does.
That's a real life thing. Like, you need sleep.
You need
to
sleep.
Stay sane.
Like, it's like a thing. It's like air
to be
and
a
water
thinking person you, like, who makes decisions that aren't silly,
right?
And is like socially not a nightmare.
Yeah,
you got to sleep.
That's right.
So, so Clinton first mentions Machado after a question that that Holt asked Trump. About how he's been saying that she lacks the stamina to be president.
Yes.
And she was talking about how he once described Machado as Miss Piggy and Miss Housekeeping because she was Latina.
Yep.
And goes, Donald, she has a name. Her name is Alicia Machado. And he goes, where did you find this?
Right. He kept saying not true, I think. This was one of the times where he just like, kept interrupting her with one word.
Yeah. But her campaign was like ready to go with this. They had a video already. They organized a call with Machado and journalists right after. Cosmo and The Guardian like published profile pieces on her like immediately. So, because they had already essentially been like teasing this story for a while. So Trump, in return, has like grown unhinged increasingly
over
all
this. This was a thing that he could have let go, but he can't let go.
Yeah. So then he decides to accuse Alicia Machado of being in a sex tape. No one can find evidence of this sex tape.
Yes.
No one can find...
This was in the tweet storm.
This was in the... Yeah, this is in the 3 a.m. tweet storm.
Yeah.
And then he also goes on Fox and Friends and said...
Yeah, the next
day. The next day, she was the winner, you know? She gained a massive amount of weight and it was a real problem. We had a real problem. So he's not backing down from his insane...
I know what I'll do. I'll go on Fox News and I'll double down.
Exactly.
On calling her a fat
pig.
Like, what?
At a rally in Coral Springs in Florida and says, who gets up at 3 o'clock in the morning to engage in Twitter attacks against a former Miss Universe? He hurled as many insults as he could. Really, why does he do things like that? His latest Twitter meltdown is unhinged even for him. And then she can say, it proves yet again that he's temperamentally unfit to be the president and commander-in-chief. So he's feeding right into her storyline about that. Yeah, like, this is... Just, like, only confirming everything everyone thought. Meanwhile, Machado's giving interviews. He's then starts threatening to talk about Bill Clinton's alleged affairs. Because he's, like, losing his mind completely and trying
to fire
in as many directions as possible.
Well, he's gone to the Breitbart place of his campaign.
Yeah. Yeah.
He was in the Kellyanne Conway place for a while. And
that was
going swimmingly.
I know. Kellyanne Conway was the only thing keeping that ship from... sinking completely.
Right, exactly.
Yeah,
and now
he's gone
like,
Breitbart. Yeah. He's gone full Breitbart. And so then on Friday on social media, he writes, for those few people knocking me for tweeting at 3 o'clock in the morning, at least you know I will be there awake to answer the call.
Oh,
yeah,
I see.
Taking Coke at 3 a.m. in the morning and going on an angry tweet storm really makes me confident that you'll be able to answer the call.
I know.
That's the beginning of nuclear war, you guys.
Yep.
That's it. It's a coked up president at 3 a.m. on an angry tweet storm.
Yeah.
Anyway, here's what else is interesting about this story is that after accusing Miss Machado of having a sex tape, it turns out he's in a softcore porn. Thank God, having sex. Oh,
no,
my God, that would be horrifying.
I know. Playing himself.
Playing himself in a suit, like, hanging out with beautiful ladies and pouring
like
champagne on a Playboy
like
logo.
Yeah, it was a Playboy.
Which brings us to another point.
Playboy.
He's been on the cover of Playboy. Like, so, hilariously, he has also signed a pledge promising to crack down on pornography if he's elected. So I'm curious which news outlets he thinks are the ones he would crack. Like, would he crack down on the ones he's appeared in? But also, this brings us to an important story that's unrelated, which is that Ted Cruz had to pull an ad earlier this year because one of his actresses was in porn.
Yes, wasn't she reading the Bible or something?
Yeah, something.
I want to say it was like
something
that was
especially moralizing. And here are some of the names of the softcore film she's been in: Carnal Wishes, Insatiable Desires, Private Sex Club.
Carnal Wishes sounds like the best one.
Obviously.
Might have to rent that later.
Yeah, Private Sex Club is a little too on the nose. That's not how you name a film, you guys.
No.
In any case, his campaign is really like turning into the reality show that he is trying.
Bring it.
That's what we came
Bring
for.
It home.
Yeah.
We only got 30 more days
of this. Exactly. What else can we uncover?
We can uncover things about his taxes.
Yeah. So... The New York Times got this, like, anonymous 3 or 5 pages of related to his 1995 income tax returns show that he probably hasn't paid income tax in years.
Like almost 20, guys.
Like almost 20.
When we say my years, mom has a theory
that Marla Maples released them, because she's like, her name is in the returns.
I'm obsessed with that theory.
I mean, I think that's the greatest theory since sliced bread.
Yeah.
that's the one. Yeah. I don't even want to go on about other theories. That's the only one I'm going with.
Carla Nordstrom, by the way,
understands like conspiracy theorizing.
I mean, I think we're doing a pretty good job too, but like
her haikus are really,
she's come to play.
She's come to play. Yeah, no, it's the whole family is really in on the fun. Yeah, if there's any publishers listening, I feel like her haikus would make a great book.
I know.
So I think that
she should absolutely be publishing.
Yeah,
these haikus.
I think that this is like her project for the next year.
I agree.
Getting the book published of the haikus of 2016.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite. I wake up and I'm like, Carla Nordstrom just, haiku, like exactly. Half awake in bed on Facebook.
Yeah,
like it's,
you gotta get like it quickly so that she knows that you were the first reader. meanwhile, so Hillary Clinton has published 9 years of tax returns.
Yes.
And as much as I would also like to know what was in her Goldman Sachs speeches, I at least feel like she's doing the bare minimum that you need to do to run for president.
Yes.
Like,
she's doing the things that past presidents have done for like decades.
Yes.
Yeah.
Donald Trump still has not released his tax returns. Yeah. So we don't have a lot to go on in terms of knowing whether or not he pays taxes, whether he has any money, whether he owns anything or everything.
And by the way, her takedown of him not releasing his taxes in the debate was
one of the embarrassing moments
for him, because it also got him to say, you know, that makes me smart. Yeah. But her,
and they're running with
her
that, by
takedown,
the way,
where she went through all of the reasons why he hasn't released his tax returns, that maybe he's not as rich and all, like, I mean, really went on for a while about
that
it.
That was a good,
and he didn't really interrupt her there, which was odd. But
well,
anyway,
she was talking about him. He loves being talked about.
But she got him good there. I mean, she turned the knife on that one.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So in any case, we have a few things that we can go on to sort of speculate. And so we're going to take you through everything we do know about his taxes.
Right, because this 1 year of tax returns can give us some answers about future
years'
tax returns.
So the Times papers show that he reported $916 million in losses in 2005, in 1995, which according to tax experts means that he could have paid no federal income tax for up to 18 years after that.
Right. Because basically what you can do is you can take that loss and you can add it,
like amortize it essentially over time
and take it off of like your income taxes for like the next few years. And we know what he made in the, or supposedly anyway, because we do have information about like what his salary was, I think, right? Isn't that basically
what it is? I think we have some information about
his information. So like you have to sort of make,
we only have it for certain years though, so I'm not sure.
We have to make some assumptions.
Yeah.
Like this doesn't necessarily
the thing is,
prove anything.
He's
but like
not
if you,
denying it.
Right. If you take that $916 million and you know,
deduct it the way you do based
it,
on what we
you
think
would,
he makes.
Like, you would be able to get away with not paying any taxes for, what was it, 18 years? Yeah. Is that what it was?
And while his campaign is sort of like vaguely not commenting on it, his surrogates keep calling it a sign of genius. Just as he did. So it kind of makes me feel like that's exactly what he did.
Yeah.
Giuliani and Christie have been all over the Sunday shows talking about his genius and how proud they are of him for not doing his civic duty.
Right. I know. But do you, I mean, I'm surprised that he's not out saying the same thing right now. I mean, he sort of said it.
He did it at the debate.
But like this has, I mean, I have always said that that was a good answer for him. I mean, I think it's a little late in the campaign to be peddling this, and she has, like, gone so far into it. But, like, and I saw him, like, tweet something, like, nobody knows the tax code better than me. And, like, I have always felt like the reason that he could say he hasn't paid any income taxes is because he knows how to game the system, and he's the best person to be able to fix the tax system.
People have gone with that before.
Like, I think it's a ridiculous answer.
Well,
but
obviously,
like, I think it could work in a way for him. But I think it's too floundery at this point.
It's too floundery at this point, and
I
think that this is really bad because all those like Tea Party kind of nutzos who are like frothing at the mouth and wherever they are, do pay taxes.
Yes, they do.
His voters are blue-collar workers.
Yes.
They are blue-collar white men, and they pay taxes.
And he's a rich motherfucker.
And he's a rich motherfucker. And if they have to pay taxes and he does not have to pay taxes, that and meanwhile their jobs are going overseas, they're funding a war no one cares about.
He's
they're
making
doing, like,
all sorts of Tea Partiers wishing that rich people would pay their fair share of taxes, which is
is exactly what...
turn them into Democrats.
Exactly. Like, I feel like the fact that he has the money to pay off politicians, as he's promised repeatedly that he's done, and not the money to pay taxes when Joe Random Person, who lives in Random Town, America, and lost his blue-collar job at a factory recently, and now works part-time at an auto dealership and part-time as a barista and part-time as a whatever, pays his taxes.
Yep.
Like, that's pretty problematic for me as a... as Joe Schmo's family, wife, friend, whatever.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, I would think. Now, then again, Joe Schmo's frothing at the mouth.
Right, he's an idiot. Insane anger. Too, Joe Schmo,
right, so. He hates immigrants and he hates black people. And he, you know, so like, I don't know what part of this he's focusing on. But at least, I mean, interestingly, this last week, because of the debate, has taken us away from some of the frothing at the mouth hatred and like allowed us to focus on some of the areas in which Trump is like not just unfit, but like unfit in a way that I think even an insane racist could understand.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, like I think that even if you hate immigrants and are afraid of everyone and are think everyone's stealing your job, one person who's also probably stealing your job is Donald Trump, who doesn't pay his taxes and like isn't contributing his fair share, while you, a person who's desperate for full-time employment, are. So in any case... so we also know a few, we have a few other sort of like little tidbits that might indicate that he doesn't pay much in taxes. And we also think he didn't pay any taxes in 1978 and 79. We have some tax information from New York, from New Jersey, because he was trying to open a, get a casino license there. That from 75 to 77, he paid a normal tax rate. And then in 78 and 79, we think that he claimed $3 million in losses and did not pay anything. There are also two tax court cases from the early 90s that indicate that he probably paid no income taxes in 1984. We have some documents from the New Jersey casino people that he didn't pay income taxes in 91 and 93 because his losses were large enough.
Is it possible that this is a man who did not pay taxes
for any of the 70s, 80s, or 90s?
Post-1978?
Yes. He's been bankrupt that whole time. I mean, this is, these claiming of losses, by the way, this is a man who's gone bankrupt six times. Yeah. So of course he was claiming losses every year. He's been bankrupt every year that I remember him existing. Yeah. So, I mean, but so he said in an interview with Meet the Press in January, I try and pay as little tax as possible because I hate what they do with the tax money. I hate the way they spend our money.
Yeah.
So it's like he's making a concerted effort to not pay his taxes for, not for monetary reasons, but for political reasons. Yeah.
He's
what
also
he made it sound
said
like.
That his... tax rate was none of your business.
Exactly.
In an interview.
Now, I would like to not pay taxes just because I don't like what they're doing with my money. But, like, I would pay more taxes if they were giving healthcare with my money, and I would pay less taxes if they were droning people with my money. If I could do that, that would be ideal, but I guess I'm not a billionaire. Or potentially a broke person. I don't know. We don't know.
Right.
But his claim that just because he's being audited, he can't release his tax returns.
Right. We know that to be
Lester
false.
Holt checked him on that at the debate, and we know from the IRS themselves that that's false. So, whatever. But we don't. So here's what we don't know. We don't know his tax rate. We don't know what he earns. We don't know the extent of his business interests. We don't know what foreign ventures he's involved in. We don't know specifics around his debt and how much his debt is.
Right.
A lot of guesses going on about that. We also don't know the extent of his charitable giving, which is
There's
interesting
been a lot
because
of...
the two things that he said make him qualified to be president are that he's a great businessman and he gives a lot to charity. And we have no proof that he does either of those things.
Right. Yeah.
So that's interesting. There's also Think Progress also created a list of the most genius tweets that are now pretty awkward now that we know he doesn't pay any taxes.
Yeah.
Including one attacking Obama. He says Barack Obama wants to raise all of our taxes, only pays 20.5% on a $790K salary. Do as I say, not as I do. Interesting. At least he's paying 20 fucking percent. Yeah. What are half of Americans don't pay income tax despite crippling government debt?
Yes, you.
Yeah, you're in the half.
Yeah. Facebook billionaire gives up his U.S. citizenship in order to save taxes. I guess $3.8 billion isn't enough.
Awkward. Okay. Trump is an American that will pay more taxes in 1 year than you pay in your entire life. So he's tweeting at angry people. That doesn't seem like that's...
That might not be right.
I think I might have paid more in taxes in my lifetime than Donald Trump.
Successful people work their asses off to make it, only to be punished by heavy taxes, which are then squandered recklessly. Yes.
Except people except me.
Except me. Yeah.
If Amazon ever had to pay fair taxes, its stock would crash and it would crumble like a paper bag. The Washington Post scam is saving it.
Oh, boy.
I would like to see what would happen to Donald Trump's business ventures if he had to pay fair taxes. Yeah.
You know what's the worst part of Barack Obama's Tuesday speech? playing class warfare, we paid for it with our tax dollars.
Well, no, Brent and I paid for it with our tax dollars. You did not.
Good sir.
Had nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
So you can rest easy knowing that Barack Obama's speech was none of your concern.
Right. Yeah. Another thing that we heard in the debate and then found out later in the week was hilarious because we didn't know at the time.
Right.
But Trump hit Hillary Clinton for a lot of her, like members of her inner circle, pleading the fifth in regards to this whole email situation.
Mm-hmm.
Trump is like the king of pleading the fifth.
Like the king.
Like the actual
king. So first of all, he misstates how many of them pleaded the fifth because he says five and there were only three.
Yeah.
That's minor, but that's important.
Yeah.
And he said, the mob takes the Fifth Amendment. If you're innocent, why are you taking the Fifth Amendment? Which is a good question, because 26 years ago in the 90s, he was in the midst of divorcing Marlo Maples and pleaded the Fifth 97 times during the divorce proceedings.
Yeah, out of 100 questions.
Yeah, out of 100 questions, by the way.
Yeah.
Related to marriage infidelity.
Ah, yes.
So he's going to go out there and hit Bill Clinton hard on the marriage Marlo infidelity thing.
Not a huge fan, and why your mother thinks
exactly.
She's giving the New York Times his taxes.
So he basically avoided admitting adultery so that he wouldn't have to pay her as much. So he ended up paying her the prenup amount instead of an additional amount because he had cheated.
Yeah.
So that's Donald Trump for you guys.
Yikes.
And because he's so insane, the newspaper racket has been in an uproar.
Even Republican newspapers or newspapers who have never endorsed before are getting in on the endorsement game, and it's not going his way so far.
It's not going his way. No. First of all, I want to point out that he only has a few endorsements, and they are from the most hilarious list of sources. The Drudge Report, because they are themselves.
I mean,
the National Enquirer, not only because they are themselves, but because the CEO, David Pecker, is a good friend of his.
One of his besties, yeah.
The New York Observer, which is owned by Ivanka's husband, Jared Kushner,
mm-hmm.
Who's like a traitor to humans.
Yep.
The New York Post, because the Post is for idiots. And the Santa Barbara News Press, which has faced like a whole bunch of internal controversies over editorial influence from the paper's owner over this story. So those are the only papers that have endorsed Trump.
Yes.
Then we've had some interesting turns where papers that don't traditionally endorse have been non-endorsing.
Yes.
USA Today,
as my journalism professors called it, the Mick paper.
Right. Yes. Yeah, that is sort of the Mick paper of America.
Yes, it is.
They never endorse in presidential races because they don't like to have thoughts on anything.
They don't. Yes.
And they didn't endorse this time either, but they did non-endorse.
They non-endorse.
And I think they actually gave the endorsement that's closest to what I actually think, which is interesting because they have so few thoughts over there.
I know.
Because they run through a list of reasons that you should not vote for Donald Trump.
Right. It was like, what the endorsement was like a, it was like an epic Trump takedown.
Yes.
It's a good read.
Yeah,
actually,
it is actually
because,
a
like,
good read.
They really like went in for him.
Yep.
I mean, it was like, they were throwing some shade in his direction.
Which they have never, ever done in their history.
Never.
But the thing that they don't do is endorse Clinton.
No.
They say, and we posted this online, so if you want to read it, go ahead. But they basically say at the end, the primary thing that you should do is make sure Donald Trump doesn't become the president. You can do whatever you think is the right thing to do to make him not the president.
And they did say,
if you want to vote for Hillary Clinton, that may be your best chance.
Right.
But if you want to vote for another, you know, a third party candidate and you just want to work on, you know, lower on down ticket races.
They stole our idea.
They stole our idea. They thought primed
idea.
Us. Yeah. And you want to work on down ticket races and you think that that will help drive turnout, that will help defeat Donald Trump and change the system eventually.
Yeah.
That's also valid, and whatever you feel comfortable doing, vote your conscience.
They just wanted to make sure that you did not go vote for Donald Trump.
That's
beyond that. They didn't give
whatever you do, vote so that Donald Trump doesn't become the president.
Right.
So use whatever your perspective is on whatever you think. Because I was actually we're having a bit of a family troll situation going on in my family where we have one member of the family trolling the rest of the family, who's like a rabid Hillary supporter.
Sure.
And one of the things that the sort of, like, we have members of our family that are Greens or
of these on the haikus, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that's interesting is a lot of our family that aren't rabid Hillary supporters do the work of registering voters and going out and knocking on doors. And, they play the ground game hard.
Yeah.
Are, like, very involved in community politics, are very involved in down-ticket races and with down-ticket candidates. And so when, you know, and this guy's just, like, sitting in his computer just, like, trolling all of us.
Yeah, exactly.
And so that I think there are what this piece recognizes is that there are many ways to contribute to making sure Donald Trump is not the president. And not all of them are just saying that you have to vote for Hillary Clinton and doing you can do whatever you think you need to do to make that happen.
Yeah.
So they want you to be actively making him not the president.
Right.
But they leave the option up to you.
Yes. Being an online troll, I would say is maybe the least effective way make sure she becomes the president.
I'm going to have some thoughts about that later, because I have been kind of, I've been having to think about why the sort of binary thinking of this race bothers me so much. And I finally have come up with an answer.
Yeah.
So,
Chicago Tribune endorsed Gary Johnson,
which is wild. You guys, that's so like a wacky. Real paper.
I know, right?
That's the Chicago paper.
Yeah, I know.
That's their New York Times. Their LA Times. It's not their New York Times.
Right.
New York Times is America's New York Times.
This
is their LA
a man
Times.
Who just had his second Aleppo moment this week.
That's his word, by the way, not ours.
Yes, he called it that when he couldn't remember the name of one living world leader.
So
and if you think we're exaggerating,
we're not.
We're not, because that was the question.
A town hall meeting with Chris Matthews. Chris Matthews asks for him to name any one of the continents, any country, name one foreign leader that you respect and look up to.
Right.
Anybody. Anywhere, like any person in the world is fine.
Yeah.
As long as they are a leader of a country, doesn't matter. There's 200 some odd countries.
It was a very like Rick Perry not remembering the third thing moment.
So Gary Johnson like exhales loudly and then Mr. Bill Weld interjects. Mine was Simon Perez.
Yeah.
Who just died.
Who just died. But Chris Matthews was looking for a living world leader
so,
that he would have to work with, basically.
Exactly. And unfortunately, they just missed the deadline with Perez. Yeah. But
he's not in power.
Not anymore. No. Yeah. Oh, yeah. This had to be someone
like,
who
this was
in power.
Right.
So this just had to show that you can, and Hillary Clinton would have crushed this question, by the way, because she can name every foreign leader.
Right. But it would have been a long-winded answer. You would have been bored out of your mind.
Bored, but
yeah.
Yeah, but you would have known that she can name a fucking world leader.
Yeah.
So finally, Chris Matthews clarifies that he starts naming continents.
Yeah, he was like, it can be
Canada,
from Africa,
Mexico,
Asia. Right.
Like,
and honestly, I mean, Canada is the right answer, too.
Like, clearly, Justin Trudeau
not for
is,
him,
like, killing
obviously,
it.
But I mean, like...
Well, but that's what I would fucking
that's
pick.
That's what I would say, too. It's the no-brainer.
It's the easy answer. And they're right fucking there.
They're that,
so
so
that
there.
Only,
I know.
That only makes us happier to be next to Canada.
I know. Yeah.
In any case, so he calls it an Aleppo moment, saying he's having trouble coming up with the name.
But in Gary Johnson's defense, of course he couldn't think of a world leader that he respects or agrees with, because none of them agree with half of his half-baked ideas.
Well, exactly. Yeah, he has a confusing platform, and so there's no one out there who's even remotely close to him politically.
Right.
That's the problem.
Not giving him a pass. That's calling his platform insane.
Yeah, like, that's which it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there are like places where the politics sort of skew confusing.
Sure.
But those are all places where they believe in having a strong social welfare system and they have rampant racism problems. Like it's not his platform.
That's the opposite of his platform.
It's the opposite of his platform. Yeah. I mean, he's
sort of
pro rampant racism problems, but he's
I think he's actually trying to be better. Yeah. Yes.
Well, no, believing in deregulating everything is being pro-rampant racism problems.
Yes, I agree.
I would say as an end game.
But he did remember in that CNN town hall that he did give a lot of props to Black Lives Matter.
Yes, that's true. Well, because he had finally learned that this was a problem.
That it existed.
It finally
woke him up to the fact that
he
racism still existed.
Told about Black Lives Matter, and he thought, oh, interesting. eventually, they help him come up with the name Angela Merkel. Which is a weird
questionable choice, I think.
I mean... Yeah. I don't trust Angela Merkel, so I don't know why he disagrees with half of her platform, too.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so confusing.
I think he probably figured that whoever he named, he was going to disagree with half of their platform.
That's true. He was just like, can I name a person? Who can
I
name?
I know.
Is there someone I can name besides Vladimir Putin?
Seriously.
So in any case, but there are other papers as well, getting back to our original point, that have made surprise endorsements.
Yeah.
Dallas Morning News.
Yes, it's the first time that they have endorsed a Democrat since before World War II. It's been over 75 years. And they had some pretty harsh words to say. They said, there's only one serious candidate on the presidential ballot in November. We recommend Hillary Clinton. Resume versus resume, judgment versus judgment. This election is no contest.
Yeah.
Well, they're not wrong about that. They said, Clinton has made mistakes and displayed bad judgment, but her errors are plainly in a different universe than her opponents.
Well, and I think that's finally the distinction that we're arriving at in this race, which I think is good, because as much as, like, we can fault her for many errors in judgment, and as much as my issues with her have nothing to do with those errors in judgment, like, her errors in judgment exist in the political landscape as, like, things that can happen.
Yeah.
Right. His are just like insane person errors in judgment. Yeah, exactly. So like the fact that the media has been giving them the same weight is sort of bizarre.
The Arizona or the Arizona Republic, which is the state's largest newspaper, it's out of Phoenix. They announced on Tuesday that they were backing Hillary Clinton. And that was the first time since the paper had been founded in 1890.
Yeah, they've never endorsed a Democrat.
Yikes.
Yeah. This is such a weird time. Yeah. Also, it makes me worry a lot about the direction of our nation that Republican papers are endorsing the Democrat. Makes me feel like the Democrats aren't the Democrats. Anyway, moving on.
And, well, before we get off of that story, Arizona, keeping it ever classy.
Yes, well, this is them.
Arizona residents have been calling the paper and are very mad, and they have been threatening and even leaving death threats with the editorial board.
And you know what? In Arizona, I would take those seriously.
I would, too, because
they're armed to the teeth.
These people have guns.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The Cincinnati Inquirer also endorsed a Democrat for the first time in almost a century.
That's one of the biggest papers in Ohio, too.
Yeah. So so things are getting nutty out there, you guys. They're getting nutty.
And I think there was a New Hampshire paper, too, that like the main one. I think they endorsed either Gary Johnson or didn't endorse Trump for like the first time or something. Like this is common. But these are the biggest ones in terms of like leadership and like, you know, the sort of like ones who haven't done it in, you know, hundreds of years.
Right.
I mean, it's I don't know if it matters or not, but I mean, I think it matters in the sense that
I was
like,
reading something about how surprise endorsements are much more effective than regular. Yeah. Like, if the New York Times endorses Hillary Clinton, we're all going to roll our eyes and hit the snooze button. But, like, if the Cincinnati Inquirer or the Chicago Tribune endorses Gary Johnson, if USA Today publishes an editorial for the first time wading into presidential politics and it's don't vote for this guy, those are things that really, like, get people's attention. So. That I think is.
And before we get off of this story, too, I want to. A lot of people sort of like, you know, I think these endorsements are important, not just because I want the press to be telling me who to vote for president, but this year, most of them have told us how dangerous Trump is, and they haven't really been that kind to Hillary, which is sort of fine.
Which she's earned.
But, you know, I have seen a lot of complaining on, you know, from Republican people that I know on Facebook, or just sort of like my, you know, daily trips to the Drudge Report. But I think it's important that, like, this is the job of a free press. I mean, not necessarily to tell us what we are supposed to think, but to tell us why the person that you might be thinking about voting for president could end America.
Yeah, exactly.
Or
the world.
Or the world. And, like, you know, we have the press to tell us things like that.
Yeah.
We have the press to remind us that you are voting for an unhinged person who's going to have access to the nuclear codes. It is the job of the press to at least remind us of that.
Yes,
like we can do with that information what we choose. We can read these endorsements and tell the Arizona Republic to go fuck themselves, and then we're going to call them up and then we're going to threaten their lives.
Right.
Like, you also have the right to do that. It's America. But like, this is the press's job.
Yeah.
And I would contend that often they don't do it enough.
Yeah. No, I...
So, I have actually been fairly pleased
to see...
The press should be telling us not to elect Donald Trump right now.
Yeah. And this is kind of... I mean, I think that they are at least finally starting to take responsibility for a monster that they created, because he is a media monster.
Absolutely.
You know,
like,
that's part of what's so different about this race is I think... We're talking about a candidate whose only credibility is derived from media savvy. It has nothing to do with anything having to do with being the president or not being the president or just like
being
a human being, whatever. Like, it's literally just like a man who understands how to grab a headline.
Yeah.
And they have been writing the headlines. So
exactly. Yeah.
I feel like to some degree,
they're
in this race
to...
in particular, they have to kind of defuse this monster they helped create.
Yeah.
Because normally in a presidential year, you don't even really find out anything about the candidates until halfway into the race.
Yeah.
And then you're kind of like, who's this boring white guy? And then you're like, oh, he plays the saxophone. I guess that's interesting and whatever. But like, you never, you know, like, this is unusual because we already knew so much about the candidates.
Yeah.
And it's also unusual because it's been so driven by, you know, sort of spectacle media.
Yeah.
That they kind of have a responsibility to be like, I know that this has been entertaining.
I know.
But like, this is not a real choice.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean... So in any case, also, the Democrats are just like fucking killing it in the fundraising comparison.
They are.
Well, that's because Hillary Clinton, instead of trying to make headlines all of August, was just like talking to rich people at fundraisers.
Right, exactly.
So it's not my favorite story.
No, and it's also not my favorite story because the reason that she is able to have all of this money right now is because of a shitty Supreme Court decision that is basically as bad as Citizens United on some level, because basically what it, you know, each candidate is only supposed to be able to take $5,400 from one specific person. Yeah. But there was this case in 2014 that basically allows, it was, McCutcheon versus the Federal Elections Commission, which like struck down the Watergate era limits on combined amount one person could donate to all federal candidates. So what they have done is like now there's like this Hillary Victory Fund.
Right.
And so like people can give a boatload of money to that. And then it's like a joint venture with the DNC. So
it's an amount that includes all of the limits of all the things they can donate to. They can donate that in a lump sum directly.
To the state parties, to the individual state parties, to like individual
candidates. And then the transfer as much money as they want to whoever.
Exactly. So basically what they've done is they've taken in all this money to hundreds of millions of dollars into the Hillary Victory Fund. They've given it out to like these 38 participating state parties
who just give it back,
who then give it back to the DNC, and then the DNC can then do whatever the hell they want with it. And they've basically given it to like seven states.
Yeah.
So basically all of this money that got brought in that shouldn't have actually been able to go to Hillary Clinton is basically going to her campaign, and they have, you know, moved it around in ways that it's now basically only going to battleground states.
Yeah.
So, you know, the Democrats denounced it at the time, but they are making full use of it right now.
Well, this is a classic Clinton strategy.
It is.
This is what Bill Clinton was so genius at, is it was in the era of soft money controversies, and he was the best soft money raiser that there ever was.
Right.
So, I mean, this is kind of like, this is how the Clintons operate. Yeah. This is what their value is to the DNC, basically.
Yeah. But they have given, I think, something like, they have, given out like $30 million to these state parties, like just in these few states or whatever.
Yeah,
and, like,
it's been...
The Republicans have only spent $11 million.
Yeah.
So they're basically, just 3-to-1 in, you know, giving out this money that they've
And people can donate up like more than $300,000 each.
Yeah.
So if you think that you're...
So that's what she was doing. Remember when we were talking about where the hell was she in August?
Yeah, she was getting $300,000 checks from rich people, from George Soros and such.
And we were ragging on her at the time. And
we're still ragging on her,
but she'll spend that money wisely, I have a feeling, probably.
I hope so.
Well, because we're going to talk about how they're spending it. It seems like she's maybe figured out that she should be spending it better than she has been.
I think that this is too late to figure this out, but they are finally going to shift course and try to stop going after conservatives all the time.
Yeah, because we've been mad about that, obviously.
Right. And finally try to shift to actually getting their own base to vote for them.
Right, exactly.
I would contend that doing that just a couple months or just a month before the election is a little disrespectful, because now you already have everyone knowing that you went out to conservative voters.
Right.
So that's a slightly problematic thing. But they're finally kind of like moving away from the, let's see if we can get disaffected Republicans to vote for us by being Republicans.
And they're back to attempting to recreate the Obama coalition.
Doing that in a month is going to be a lot more difficult than doing that in a year, but okay.
But they are, you know, the headquarters,
Trump has nothing like this going on.
Right,
so at least
exactly. So that, he has no operation. I mean, I think they're trying to get it together, but like they don't have these huge like infrastructures like that.
But they're finally trying to like do push early voting, register people to vote, like do the kinds of things that you have to do to get first time voters out there and people who don't normally show up to.
People who don't go every 2 years, people who are sort of like, you know, low propensity voters. Like she was in Iowa this week, and like they've spent a lot of money in Iowa recently because Iowa just started early in-person voting this week.
Right.
They have also had a lot of celebrities out in these states that have like voter registration that ends like the first part of October to try and sort of like have flashy events to get people to come and register. And they have, you know, they've been doing all of the things that you would, they've also been focusing on African American communities and Latino communities to sort of, again, try and get that, you know, the Obama core constituents to like re-show up. Because that has been a little bit of a concern. Nobody really knows what this electorate is going to look like.
Yeah.
Because they don't think it's going to look like it did in 2008, 2012. Well, because, although people in 2012 didn't think it was going to look like it did in 2008, and it looked exactly like it did in 2008.
True.
So
that's different because they were voting for the same candidate.
That's true. Yes.
And this is someone who has spent up until right now only pitching to Republican voters.
I know.
So The Obama coalition built that as a grassroots effort over an extended period of time in both races. Yeah. And this is a really quick turnaround considering that the deadlines for registering to vote are about to close in a bunch of states. Yeah. So, like, this is something they should have gotten to earlier.
Registered.
Yeah.
Is their goal anyway. I mean, luckily, I think
a lot of people registered to vote for Sanders. So I think that he did a good job of getting people registered.
I know.
I don't know if any of those people are going to show.
Yeah.
But it's at least working as a preemptively. It seems like they're starting to show some gains in some of the states that she's been stepping up the appearance in, like Florida, North Carolina.
And I think when you are running against a candidate who does not have an operation like this, this is going to be...
It'll be more effective than
it would. It's going to be more effective because she could really... She could win some close states because of this.
Yes,
you know, like if Iowa is tied...
And he's got nothing going on.
And yeah, exactly. Then this could push you over the top in a few of those places. North Carolina is close.
Yeah.
She's spent a lot of time there in the last week because they started their mail-in ballot process. So exactly. She is trying to get out ahead of that. So like they're doing the right things, it seems like.
Right. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate though that just as this started, someone's leaked audio of her talking about Sanders supporters back in February.
Just as she was also starting to do a lot of millennial outreach over the last couple of weeks, she's had a few
setbacks.
She's had a few setbacks. She's also had a few events with Sanders, and Sanders has had a few events by himself in the last couple of weeks, actually.
And he's been doing a lot of
focusing on the millennial vote because they were for millennials. But apparently, it's just because they all live in their parents' basement and don't know what Scandinavia is.
Yeah, exactly. You guys, it's hard being an idiot. It's hard not... You need someone like Hillary Clinton to come in and tell you what you think about things.
Yeah.
And luckily, she's here for you.
Yeah, I got in a big debate with my roommate about this the other day, who is a Clinton supporter, obviously. But I mean, like, he did not read this as I did, and I get that. It's not the 47%.
Yes, exactly.
It's not.
It's much more mild. It's just patronizing.
It's patronizing and condescending is what it is.
That's what it is.
She's not. I wouldn't say that she's actually wrong, really, about any of these
things.
It's a little offensive that she sort of like implies none of us have jobs.
Well, it's offensive that she implies
that we're all baristas.
It's dismissive of our political will, because I think what she's not addressing is, and I'm about to use a word that I hate and I'm sorry about it, is that there's been a bit of a paradigm shift in terms of what the sort of political will of young voters actually looks like. So when she talks about these, you know, she says... You know, and on the other side, there's just a deep desire to believe we can have free college, free healthcare, and what we've done hasn't gone far enough, and we just need to, you know, go as far as, you know, Scandinavia, whatever that means. And half the people don't know what that means, but it's something they deeply feel. And I think what she's not realizing is that all of these things that she just sort of passes off as impossible, part of the frustration with the Sanders coalition was that she wouldn't fucking say the words. You know, and that there's power in saying the words. There's power in saying we are in favor of single payer healthcare. Maybe it's not fucking possible, but it's certainly not possible if we're not ever going to be in favor of it.
No.
So that's the I think this sort of shift in terms of how we discuss our priorities and our goals, she kind of brushes that off as just like insanity.
Yeah.
And I think that for young voters, that is how we want in the future Democratic politics to move forward.
Yeah.
I want a Democratic politician who knows, you know, who says, listen, I don't know if we'll get single payer healthcare. I will try though.
Yeah.
We will do whatever we can to move in that direction.
Yep.
But the goal is single payer healthcare.
Yeah.
The goal is to have free college education. Maybe we're not going to get that this year, but we understand that that's the goal. And we respect that that's what you want. Like, that's what I think she doesn't understand about how to approach these voters.
Right.
Is I don't even, you know, the part we've heard enough about living in basements and not having jobs. We are suffering from, you know, we are. We got screwed in a recession.
And a lot of people are. And you and I have talked about that ourselves, about how people are being underpaid and they entered the job market that didn't exist.
But so, like, she sounds not interested in solving it. She sounds interested in humoring us in this quote. So I think it's more just that she sort of reinforces everything that we thought about her.
She also talks about, like, you know, talking about she wants to be in the space that's center left / center right.
Right. That's not a space, you guys. That's all the spaces. And that is a 50% evil platform.
Yeah.
And listen, Obama was a 50% evil platform, but people voted for him because he talked in sweeping statements about how he understood what the goal was.
Yeah.
You know, there's power in simple, you know, rhetoric. And for her to constantly belittle young voters for acting like they don't understand what they want, they don't understand what's possible, when we decide what's possible.
Yeah, exactly.
We are the voters. She doesn't get to tell us what's possible. We decide what's possible.
Well, see, and that's what I was saying to That's what I was saying to Galen, actually, yesterday, because, like, he and I were sort of debating what was possible, and I was like, but what you're not following is that the reason that we were voting for him is because that's actually what we wanted.
Yeah.
And not because, like, we...
We're not delusional.
No.
We're like, voting for the priorities we have.
Right, and the reason that we... Yeah, exactly. And the reason that we were voting for that is because we had a candidate that was actually expressing that for the first time. So, like...
It's possible if voters want it.
Right.
Everything is possible if voters decide they want it. And that's what's been frustrating me about the messaging from Hillary's camp this whole time.
Yeah.
Is that, and that's kind of what's frustrating me historically about the Clintons, is that they kind of patronizingly are like, it's hilarious that you think you want that, but we can't have it. So sorry.
I know.
Instead, we're going to have to frack. Like, that's, yes. The thing is, if voters decide they don't want to frack, they want to ban on fracking, then it's possible.
We can have that.
We can have it. We can have anything we vote for. That's the whole point of fucking democracy.
Yeah.
I have another thing to say.
Yeah.
Which is more of a general conversation. I said earlier that I finally understand what's kind of been frustrating to me about a lot of the sort of way that this, the binary way that this race has been framed. There is a lot of conversation right now happening about protest votes.
Yes.
I have potentially, to my own peril, discussed that I am considering casting a protest vote.
Yeah.
The thing is that I'm not considering it a protest vote. That is a moniker being put on me.
Yes.
But what I am considering is that if you want to think about my vote as a protest vote, you are forced to consider that every single vote in this race will be a protest vote. Yeah. And there's one more thing you're forced to consider, which is when you tell me that protest voting is ineffective and I'm throwing away my vote and I'm voting for Donald Trump, which, by the way, if I am not voting for Donald Trump, I'm not voting for Donald Trump.
Right.
If I'm voting in line with my priorities, then I'm not voting for Donald Trump.
Well, that's what I have always said, too. Right. I mean, if you end up voting for Jill Stein, you're not voting for Donald Trump. You're voting for Jill Stein.
Exactly. But beyond that, I want to have a conversation more broadly about this because the implication of that is that a protest vote is a waste of vote because protest voting is ineffective.
Right. And this election proves that it's not
ineffective. Protest voting works, you guys. Bernie Sanders was built... The Sanders campaign was a protest campaign.
Yes.
That was built on the backs of protest votes. It almost fucking took her down.
It almost won.
Donald Trump is a protest candidate. People are not voting for him because he has smart ideas that he's expressed. They're voting for him because they're angry about the establishment. Yeah. They're angry about how things have been working. They don't have the things that they thought they were supposed to have that they were promised. And so they're fucking furious at everyone. They're scared. Yep. And they're voting for a protest candidate who represents the antithesis of civilized political discourse.
And if you are voting for Hillary Clinton because Donald Trump is too scary of a candidate to be the president,
That's also a protest vote,
you fuckers.
Yeah. Like, so when we talk about whether, you know, when, and I realize this is part of their media strategy to sort of discredit the idea of voting for third party candidates.
Yes, of course.
If I hear, there's two things. If I hear one more conversation comparing Jill Stein to Ralph Nader, I'm going to fucking lose my mind. Not because I think that Ralph Nader was evil, but because I'm sick of it being political, sort of like being sort of a bedrock fact statement that he lost the election for Al Gore. Who lost the election for Al Gore? And we've talked about it a lot on this podcast, is fucking Al Gore, because he was a boring fucking candidate. He chose an actual evil running mate. Yep. And then he was like, vote for me anyway, you assholes. And people were like, fuck you. And that is kind of what Hillary Clinton's strategy has been this whole time, which is why when you tell me...
It has mirrored that in many respects.
In so many respects, including choosing a medium evil running mate.
Yes,
so,
exactly. That's what I meant.
Yeah, but I mean, she's also, her campaign even before that was sort of like, vote for me because you have no choice. Millions of people responded by saying, fuck you, and voting for Bernie Sanders, who had a platform that was not even conceivable in political discourse up until right now when voters in protest votes determined that it was conceivable. So I don't want to talk about protest votes being something that somehow distract from the real candidates. Because protest votes,
They inform the real candidates.
Yeah. And I think that beyond that, I think I'm frustrated that the Clinton campaign, in terms of how they message the argument to vote for them, doesn't understand enough about Sanders voters to understand that really they needed to create a situation where the voters felt comfortable coming to them on their own accord and not trying to sort of like loyalty vote us.
Yeah.
Because we're a really fucking radical and problematic demographic.
Yeah.
We don't do things.
We're unloyal.
We're unloyal. We don't care about the political parties. We don't vote because we've been told to vote this way. Yeah. You know, I think We went and voted for a candidate who represented things so far out of the spectrum of what Democratic politics has talked about for years that it wasn't even in your radar.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I think that what she needed to do was lay some groundwork to be like, you guys, I get it. there are things we don't agree on. I am trying though. Yeah. And I want you to be part of this coalition and I want to listen to you. And I understand that you're frustrated and I don't understand it in a condescending way. I believe that things are possible. I believe change is possible.
Yeah.
And so I want you to feel comfortable voting for me. And instead,
and I think she might actually think that.
I think so too. I think that she doesn't message it well.
No.
I think that she's almost being murdered by her own supporters in this regard because her supporters are really angry.
They are.
Really angry.
Yeah.
And I think that it's fear anger. I think it's a lot of people who, like, I think that because we follow these elections so carefully, we understand that there is more of a game being played than just which of the two candidates do we vote for.
Yeah.
There's the game where activists on the right and left have to sort of try to grab issues and publicize, you know, and try to like build coalitions around issues because they hope the candidates will move to where the voters are.
Yeah.
There's the game where we sort of like decide whether or not, you know, the sort of the down party or the down ticket candidates are, you know, more worth doing work for than, you know, like where we sort of decide whether it's a top up or bottom up or top down or bottom up election. Yeah. There's games beyond just the game of like, well, we have a candidate, so now we got to vote for her. We can't do anything else. We can't ever criticize her ever again because there's like, I think that allowing criticism for Hillary Clinton would have done more to benefit their, you know, sort of their reputation with Sanders voters than shutting down that conversation immediately.
They just weren't interested in listening to it. Though.
Exactly. Because you have to give Sanders voters the ability to kind of discuss themselves into voting for her. And and that has to, they have to admit that they don't agree on a lot of things.
Yeah.
So this is asking voters who don't agree with you to make a choice they're
it's
not happy about. It's
them.
Asking a lot of them.
Yeah.
And so the idea that the best way to approach those people, when in real life, that's never how you'd approach someone that you wanted to do. You manipulate those people into doing what you want them to do. You don't demand.
You don't demand it.
If I want you to clean my house, I inception you into cleaning my house. I don't demand you clean my house.
Yeah.
I don't strong arm you into cleaning my house.
Yeah.
And then tell you that the thing.
Or you pay me. She could pay me to vote for her.
That's true. Yes. But I mean, the thing that, like, I don't tell you that the thing that that finally gave you a voice is a thing that doesn't work.
Right, exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, no. I don't tell you that. No. So in any case, I've been frustrated about that. And
I'm with you.
You guys, Clinton supporters, it's allowing people on the left to have a conversation about what your candidate stands for is not treason.
No,
it's necessary.
It's not. Yeah.
I feel like me and you have probably done more to convince far left voters to vote for Clinton than Clinton's campaign has ever done. And
I know, that wasn't our intention.
And that was never our intention. But I mean, I feel like there is a degree to which, depending on how kind of outrageous a person you are, you can either make the safe choice or the bold choice.
Yeah.
And like, I think that there are plenty of people who rightfully want to make a safe choice here. And that safe choice is Hillary Clinton. And that's fine.
Yeah, we don't begrudge you
of that. We don't begrudge you of that. Of course not. It's just that like, the conversation has to happen so that you fully understand what you've done.
Yeah.
You know, and you feel good about it. You feel like you've weighed all the options and that was the right choice.
Yeah.
You have to feel like your vote actually belongs to you and not to a party that already pre-assigned it to themselves.
Right. Wow. That was profound.
Yeah, I'm deep, you know. In any case,
we're
going to really quickly go
over. We're going to breeze through these, because we're going to write up about them.
Right.
We already mentioned.
And we're going to make a cheat sheet like we did 4 years ago when you weren't listening to this podcast.
But we already mentioned the 233-page election guide, and that's because there are 17 propositions
that's
on
there.
That's
too many.
And that's too many.
It's
and
like
we
we're doing the work of our state legislature, and we're paying them to do the work.
Exactly. Well, because a lot of these propositions are actually confirming
votes that the legislature already
bills
took.
Bills that they already passed.
You guys, can the legislature not, like, ratify their own bills?
Apparently they can't.
That is not how I want the state government to work.
I agree.
I did not vote. I didn't go to the polls for them so that I could then do their job for them.
Yeah, I'm with
some
you.
Some bullshit. Anyway. But we might be able to legalize marijuana. That's fun.
Yeah, we already have medical, but, like,
we can. We might be able to repeal the death penalty. You guys, let's just do it this time.
Let's
we
do
vote
it.
On it all the
we
time.
Try.
And we're, like, why can't we just do it? Let's be better.
I think we might this time.
There's also one that would speed it up. I'm not as convinced that one's a good idea.
No, I don't either. I'm not either.
There's extending tax rates on high earners. Yep. Let's keep that one.
Do that. Oh, a $2 additional tax on cigarettes.
I'm in favor of taxing cigarettes up to $1 trillion until they don't exist.
Yeah.
Regulating ammunition. This is the, I want to call it the Chris Rock bill.
This is the Chris Rock proposition.
It would add background checks to the purchase of ammunition, which you should, as I was saying to Brent, you should get a background check in this environment if you like fucking say, I was thinking about getting a gun.
Yeah, that's
like,
it.
That should be enough.
Yeah,
like,
I realize
that sounds fascist, but I don't care.
You should have to go see a psychiatrist.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you should have a full evaluation if you're getting deadly weapons.
Yep, school bonds, of course.
They might, plastic bag ban. They might
Yes.
This one is one that passed in the legislature, and now we have to vote on it, even though they voted on it.
Right, because the plastic bag industry immediately got enough signatures that they needed, like, as soon as we passed the ban.
There's plenty of things they can make out of plastic. Shift course. Right? Everything's plastic. Yeah. Prescription drug pricing is on the ballot, requiring porn stars statewide to wear condoms. That was a big controversy in L.A.
L.A., yes. Overhauling
the parole system.
Yeah, repealing the ban on bilingual education.
Why do we have a ban on bilingual education?
Yeah,
we're a border state.
Yeah.
Like, they have bilingual education in New York.
I would contend that because we're a border state is why we have that
ban.
Because it was passed as a proposition back in the 90s, and it was probably when people were assholes
in the 90s.
Exactly, and people were just being, like, angry about, like, everybody needs to speak English. And so, like, Democrats were not, you know, the left was not immune from that thought process back in the day.
No. But this is absurd.
It's
bilingual
ridiculous.
Education is fine, guys.
Yeah, I mean...
everything's fine.
Yeah.
They also are gonna... There's one where they basically are asking voters whether California officials should work towards figuring out how to repeal Citizens United.
Yeah.
Which I think is hilarious that they have to ask.
Right, because we can't do anything about
it.
It's basically just, like, letting us voice our opinion, which I'm happy to do.
Sure.
But
we're the biggest state in the union. Let's fucking do it.
Yeah.
But, like, that's hilarious. And then one that would make a rule that legislation online should be publicly available online for 3 days before a final vote, which is, like, all right, transparency, let's do it. In any case, hilariously, though, there's also finally some news from Congress.
Oh, I know. We haven't talked about that
We never
long
get
time.
To talk about that anymore.
Yeah.
Well, it's one of the most...
work this summer anyway? I don't think they did.
No, they don't. And they also don't work during the year, so it's like, whatever.
Yeah.
It's one of the most hilarious situations ever, though.
Because we joke a lot about, like, how Obama gets blamed for everything, like, truly everything.
Yeah.
And this is something that he got blamed for that is just too ridiculous to even, like, wrap your head around.
No,
because, like, he is now being blamed for a bill that he vetoed.
Yeah, it's a bill they passed, he vetoed it, they overrode his veto, and
now
they're
panicked about it.
They're angry that he didn't tell them that it was a
bad
bill.
What the bill was.
But he vetoed it.
He vetoed it. Yeah. So there's this bill that allows victims of the 9/11 attacks to sue Saudi Arabia.
Right.
Because that's where
for the unproven claims that the terrorists are from there.
Right.
Now,
well, they were from there, but they were being funded.
Yeah.
Right, exactly.
Obama brought up the important point that would allow anyone who's been, like, drone attacked by the U.S. to sue us. And that's, like, everyone on Earth. So, like, that would open us up to potentially an endless stream of lawsuits where we would just have to pay all of our money to drone attack victims that we shouldn't have drone attacked in the first place.
Exactly.
So he vetoed it.
Yeah.
Because that's what presidents do when they're not crazy.
Right.
Then, for the first time
in his presidency,
they overrode him 97-1.
Harry Reid, bless his heart, was the only person.
Can we have a discussion? What were our senators up to?
I don't know.
Do we need to talk? I mean, I know Barbara Boxer's leaving, but, like, do we need to talk to her?
Maybe.
Like, I mean, we probably need to talk to Dianne Feinstein. She's nuts.
The White House called it the single most embarrassing thing that has the United States Senate has done.
In decades.
Damn,
I'm sure they've gone more embarrassing.
I wanted the sentence to be over at that point.
But that's probably true.
Yeah.
Because everyone immediately decided that it was a big mistake to override it.
Right. 28 lawmakers who had just passed the override sent letters to their own party leaders on Thursday saying that maybe there should be some changes to the law. So Mitch McConnell decided that he was going to make a statement.
Yeah.
And he said, that was a good example, it seems to me, of a failure to communicate early about the potential consequences of a piece of legislation. By the time everybody seemed to focus on some potential consequences of it, members had already basically taken a position. He went on to say, I think it was just a ball dropped. I wish the president, I hate to blame everything on him, and I don't.
But you do.
But it would have been helpful had he, we had a discussion about this much earlier than last week. He vetoed the fucking thing.
He pretty much told you.
What did you want him to do?
Like,
also, he's been saying for months that he was against this bill. By the way,
I knew why he was against this bill and
because
why
this bill has been debated for a long time. And he has been on record as saying, guys, don't be getting involved in this.
Yeah. If we were aware of why the bill shouldn't have been passed, then I feel like the Senate, who are much closer to the president than we are, and his word is much more important to their everyday lives than ours, probably should have known.
Yeah. John Cornyn, who is the Republican whip in the Senate, said, what's so remarkable to me is the detachment of the White House from anything to do with the legislative process. They were basically...
He was one of the sponsors of the bill, by the way.
They were basically missing in action during this whole process.
Except for when they sent you the ultimate message by vetoing the bill.
I mean,
why didn't the president take all of them aside personally and give them a rundown of every piece of legislation?
So mean.
He's so rude. I know. Yeah. Sometimes I just don't get what he's up to.
I know. Everything is his fault.
Well, I may never have to because we might die in an earthquake.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
Apparently, there's an earthquake warning because we're all going to... The big one's coming before Tuesday.
Apparently a bad one, I guess. I know, like, yeah. So they say. I don't know how they can say this. But
well, this is also the third time that they've issued this warning in
there's
like
There's been
some,
a lot of, like, small earthquakes out by the Salton Sea, which is where the San Andreas Fault, there's, like, a lot of activity there. And they've been having, like, a ton of them. Supposedly that part of the fault line goes bonkers every 300-some years, and it hasn't done so since 1690. So we're
over
past
there.
The point of that, and they are now saying that, like, we have a, what is it, at its high, a 1 in 100 chance of an earthquake magnitude 7.0 or higher, which is massive.
Yeah.
Now, at its worst, a 1 in 3,000 chance. But I don't like that 1 in 100 chance.
I don't like any chance. I don't like the fact that I live in a place where there's a chance.
No.
I'm not happy about that.
No. So be on the lookout for whether California
Well, there was somewhere, someone was like telling me that someone else they knew had told them, I mean, this was like third-hand information, that there was going to be a massive earthquake on Friday. And I was like, oh specifically?
Oh, right, sure.
Didn't happen.
We're predicting them like the weather now?
I don't think that works.
I mean, we can hardly get the weather right.
I know. It's even in Southern California, where the weather is the same every day, we often get it wrong. So, like, it rained the other day, and no one reported it. It was so weird.
I mean, people panicked about it.
Yeah, as they do. But nobody had warned us that it was going to rain.
Yeah.
But so it's unclear whether before Tuesday we'll perish into the sea or whether we'll just be here as usual.
Yeah.
We'll let you know next week on the podcast.
Yeah. Thankfully, my roommate is like one can of non-perishable soup away from being a doomsday prepper.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, you guys are prepared.
I'm in the right place.
I know. I don't know if I'm as prepared because I feel like my whole house might fall down.
Oh, it might.
Yeah, and that seems like exactly what it would do.
Yeah.
And I feel like now we've disagreed on what the proper earthquake protocol is. It used to be you got in a door, and then there was the triangle of life, and then someone told me that was debunked, and I was like, by who?
I don't know.
Then, like, you're supposed to, like, lie next to your car or something. I mean, there's so many questions.
I don't care.
And back in the day, you had to get under a table, but now you're not supposed to do that anymore.
God.
It's like, I don't have the energy. While we were gone, everyone got shot. Chelsea, my home neighborhood in New York, got bombed. A lot happened while we were gone. We're not going to tell you much about it.
We've been gone for 3 weeks, so we're not going
to We don't have the energy to rehash all the shootings that happened while we were gone, but rest assured there were too many.
I was going to say, sometimes we like to just remind you that we know things, even if we aren't covering them, because we don't want you to think that we
we're shirking on our duty. Exactly.
Like, we know there was a bomb in Chelsea.
Yeah, well, we definitely know that, because my parents live 2 blocks from there.
Yeah.
But also, in more exciting news that's more uplifting, the Colin Kaepernick sports kneeling during the national anthem has been spreading.
Spreading everywhere.
Specifically in women's sports. Women are killing it.
Yeah.
Women always kill it. We're just the better gender. In any case, that's the news. we will be back next week. We will have a special surprise. So get ready for that.
Very special surprise.
Very special. So be pre-excited about it. We will announce more as the week goes on. We will talk to you next week. Bye.